Well, good morning to all of you. I'm going to ask you to turn in your Bible to 1 Samuel chapter 17. 1 Samuel chapter 17. What a blessing it is to be together this morning. What a blessing it is to have a Bible, to have these words of life that we can study from and read from. Let us never forget what a blessing it is to know what God would have us do, to know how God would have us live, to learn so many good and useful things, to learn the message of eternal life about Jesus Christ. Thank you so much for being here. And let's set our mind now to study together. 1 Samuel chapter 17 and verse 1, the Bible says this. Now the Philistines gathered their armies for battle. And they were gathered at Socoh, which belongs to Judah. And they camped between Socoh and Azekah and Ephes-Damim. Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and camped in the valley of Elah and drew up in battle array to encounter the Philistines. The Philistines stood on the mountain on one side, while Israel stood on the mountain on the other side, with the valley between them. Then a champion came out from the armies of the Philistines, named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was clothed with scale armor which weighed 5,000 shekels of bronze. He also had bronze greaves on his legs and a bronze javelin slung between his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and the head of his spear weighed 600 shekels of iron. His shield carrier also walked before him. He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel and said to them, "Why do you come out to draw up in battle array? Am I not the Philistine and you servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will become your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall become our servants and serve us." Again the Philistines said, "I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." And when Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. This story in 1 Samuel chapter 17 is a story about the value of courage. It teaches us how necessary it is and how important it is in the lives of the servants of God. And it teaches us that in two ways. One way it teaches us the value of courage is by showing us what happens to the servants of God when they don't have it. That word, that verse there in verse 11, it says, when they heard the words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. That word there for dismayed is the Hebrew word chathath. And what that means is to be shattered. And that's exactly what you see in the armies of the living God. When they hear the words of the Philistine, they're shattered. They're empty of courage. They'll stand for nothing. They'll fight nothing. They draw back in cowardice. They have no courage. So they sit on the sidelines and do nothing rather than fight for their God. This story shows us how ineffective and honestly pitiful the servants of God are when they have no courage. Of course, this story also shows us. It shows us what amazing things God can do through us when we do have the courage that's required of us. Let's skip ahead to the end of the story for a second, because you and I both know how this story ends. 1 Samuel 17 and verse 50. Thus David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and he struck the Philistine and killed him, but there was no sword in David's hand. Then David ran and stood over the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. That's how the story ends. And it ends that way because there's a young boy named David who had courage. And because of that, God was able to do amazing things through him. This story teaches us the absolute necessity that the servants of the living God would live with courage. You know, it has been said that courage is the greatest of all human virtues, that it is the first virtue. And why is that? Why is courage so valuable? Why do people like Winston Churchill and Aristotle, look it up, they said it, say that courage is the first virtue? And that is because it is the virtue that enables us to live out all the other virtues with any consistency at all. Because when it comes down to it, if you're going to live a virtuous life, if you're going to live a faithful and a godly life, you're going to need some courage to do that, aren't you? You know, anybody can be honest when it's easy to be honest. When you've got nothing to hide, when you're not ashamed of what you've done, you can be honest, can't you? You can tell the truth in that situation. It takes courage to be honest when you've done wrong. To have the integrity to come forward and be honest about what you've done. Anybody can be generous when things are good, when your bank account's full and you're feeling flush. It's easy to hand out a little bit of money and help somebody when they're in need. It's a little bit harder when you're worried about recession and inflation and gas prices that are over $4 per gallon. I saw $3.99 the other day, yesterday. How about that? It takes a little bit of courage to be generous when things are like that. Anybody can stand for the truth in a building full of like-minded people. Guys, preaching is not hard. I know that there may be some visitors here. I know that there may be some people here who may not believe exactly all the same things that I believe. But when I get up every Sunday, I know without a doubt, there's a good 450 people here at least who agree with basically everything I'm going to say. That's not hard. That doesn't take much courage. But to stand up for the truth at your workplace, at your school, that's something else. That's a different kind of bear. And so understand that courage is the first virtue. It is the one that guarantees all the other. It is the one that enables us to practice godliness with any consistency at all. Perhaps that's why Peter writes this in 2 Peter 1 in verses 5 through 7. He says, now for this reason also, applying all diligence, in your faith supply moral excellence, and in your moral excellence knowledge, and in your knowledge self-control, in your self-control perseverance, and in your perseverance godliness, and in your godliness brotherly kindness, and in your brotherly kindness love. Now you may read that and think, where's courage? And I'll tell you, it's the very first thing he says. That word moral excellence, that's the Greek word arete, which means goodness, morality, virtue, valor. Peter says courage is the first thing you add to your faith. Because all those other things that you add, guess what? You're going to need courage. You're going to need moral excellence, moral fortitude to do any of those. Courage is the first virtue, the first thing you add to your faith. Let me ask you this morning, do you have courage? Do you live with courage? And maybe you're sitting there and you look at the story of David and Goliath, or you look at those other stories of courage that you read about in the Bible and you think, man, I don't think I have courage at all. You look at those examples that we gave and you think, yeah, when things get tough, when things get scary, I do shrink. And you think to yourself, I'd sure like to live with courage. How do I find that? How do I learn to do that? Well, the Bible tells us how. The mistake that we often make when we read the story of David and Goliath is we sit back and we gawk. And we think, man, this is a great story about some great guy who did something that I could never do. I'm here to tell you this morning that that's not what this story teaches us. This story teaches us about the value of courage. It teaches us about the necessity of courage. And it teaches us where courage comes from. It teaches us, if you want to live like David, if you want to be brave like he was in this moment, it teaches us how to find that courage. It teaches us where it comes from and what its source is. And so what I want to do with you for a few moments this morning is I want to walk through this familiar story of David and Goliath. But I want to do that with one express purpose in mind. I want us to notice where courage comes from, how it's generated, how David ends up doing this amazing thing through the power of God. I want to show you where you can find the courage that you need to live a faithful life. Start reading with me. 1 Samuel 17. 1 Samuel 17. Read with me beginning in verse 12. We'll pick up where we left off if I can get the page open there. I got thin pages, guys. Verse 12. Now David was the son of an Ephrathite of Bethlehem in Judah, whose name was Jesse. And he had 8 sons. And Jesse was old in the days of Saul, advanced in years among men. The 3 older sons of Jesse had gone after Saul to the battle, and the names of his 3 sons who went out to the battle were Eliab the firstborn, and the second to him Abinadab, and the 3rd Shammah. David was the youngest. Now the 3 oldest followed Saul. But David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's flock in Bethlehem. The Philistine came forward morning and evening for 40 days to take his stand. Then Jesse said to David his son, "Take now for your brothers an ephah of this roasted grain and these 10 loaves and run to the camp to your brothers. Bring also these 10 cuts of cheese to the commander of their 1,000 and look into the welfare of your brothers and bring back news of them. For Saul and they and all the men of Israel are in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines." So David arose early in the morning and left the flock with the keeper and took the supplies and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the circle of the camp while the army was going out in battle array, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines drew up in battle array, army against army. Then David left his baggage in the care of the baggage keeper and ran to the battle line and entered in order to greet his brothers. And as he was talking with them, behold, the champion, the Philistine from Gath, named Goliath, was coming up from the army of the Philistines, and he spoke the same words, and David heard them. When all the men of Israel saw the man, they fled from him and were greatly afraid. The men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who is coming up? Surely he is coming up to defy Israel, and it will be that the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel." Then David spoke to the men who were standing by him, saying, "What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God?" I want you to appreciate that this story makes very clear that David was not supposed to be part of this battle. He was not supposed to be a part of this battle or any battle for that matter, was he? David was there delivering grain and cheese. And so it's kind of shocking that he ends up fighting at all. There's no reason he should be on the battlefield. And that makes you wonder, what is behind David's decision to fight? How in the world does he get involved in this? And I contend this morning part of his desire, part of his motivation would have been to avoid taxes. I think there was something more important at play there. I contend that David got involved in this battle because he heard the words of Goliath. And his heart was stirred up and inflamed within him. David's decision to fight Goliath was rooted in righteous indignation and a strong sense of responsibility. Did you see that at the end of verse 26? He said, "For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God?" When all of Israel, and even King Saul, when they heard the taunts of Goliath, all they could think about was how big he was and how scary he was. When David heard his taunts, he thought, "How could he say that about my God?" David heard his taunts, and he thought to himself, "Something must be done about this." And that shows us the first thing I want to point out to you this morning. The first thing we need to realize about courage is that courage does not come from having only a little bit of fear. Courage comes from feeling great responsibility. That's what David teaches us. It doesn't come from having little fear. It comes from feeling great responsibility. You know, there are 2 similar misconceptions we have about courage and about brave people. And they're very similar to each other. One of them goes like this: well, brave people just aren't scared like everybody else is. And the second one is, well, they may be scared, but they're just not as scared as I am, right? We look at courage like we look at people who ride roller coasters. And now if you go down to Busch Gardens with your group of friends, there's going to be two kinds of people, right? There's going to be that one kind of people that says, I hate roller coasters. I'm never going to ride roller coasters. You guys ride it and have fun. I don't understand why those people go to theme parks at all. It doesn't make any sense. But then you have that other group of people, right, who say, let's find the biggest, scariest, most dangerous ride, and let's ride it without a harness. Like, you have those people that are like, hey, did you hear about that new ride? It advertised it's got broken rails and the seatbelts don't work. Let's do it. You have a friend like that? And we think there's these two kinds of people, the scared ones and the ones that just aren't scared of anything for some reason. And we assume that's how it works when it comes to having spiritual courage. You know, some people just aren't scared like me. Some people, they just don't think it's scary to evangelize. They don't think it's scary to do the right thing. They just aren't afraid like I'm afraid. And for that reason, because we have that misconception, we think to ourselves, well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to sit on the sidelines. I'm going to avoid confrontation. I'm not going to do what I know that I need to do, that I'm scared to do, because I'm just going to wait to do that until I figure out how to be less afraid. Because we think that's what courage is. It's just being less scared than other people. I got to tell you, I don't think that's what's going on with David at all. I think David would have had to be one of the most foolish people in the world to look at Goliath and say, he's not scary. Of course he was scary. But courage isn't about being less afraid. It's about feeling great responsibility. He's willing to do something terrifying because he knows it's something that must be done. Courage, being a courageous person, is not about having, it's not about learning how to not be scared. It's not about learning how to have only a little bit of fear. It's about learning how to be the kind of person that looks at something and says, something must be done about this. This giant must be slain. Courage. It's about being the kind of person who says, you know, I'm not sure how we're going to make it work financially, but something must be done to help them. Courage is a person who says, you know, I'm not sure that I know all the verses I need to know to evangelize, but that's a lost person out there, and something must be done about that. Courage is looking at your marriage that's hit a rough spot and saying, you know, I'm kind of scared to do what I need to do. I'm kind of scared to have this conversation, but something must be done about this. Courage is somebody who says, I'm scared to tell the truth because I really messed up. I'm scared to confess my sins, but you know what? Something must be done about this. That's where courage comes from. Not from feeling little fear, but by being that person who feels great responsibility to do what must be done. The story goes on after verse 26. We're going to pick that up in verses 31 through 37. Saul calls David in to talk to him because he's heard what this young boy is saying about going to fight Goliath and how he's interested to fight him. So he wants to see if David really means what he's saying. Pick up reading with me in verse 31. When the words which David spoke were heard, they told them to Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail on account of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. Then Saul said to David, you are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, while he has been a warrior from his youth. But David said to Saul, your servant was tending his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock, I went out after him and attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. And when he rose up against me, I seized him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has taunted the armies of the living God. And David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and may the Lord be with you. Something else that we need to appreciate about courage is this, that courage does not come, it's not rooted in self-confidence, but it really is rooted in confidence in God. You know, when you look at Goliath, what you see is a man with tremendous self-confidence. He is your classic macho man. He is so confident that he's willing to challenge every single man within an army of thousands. But all of that confidence comes from himself. It comes from his arms and his legs and his mind and his weapons and his shield. He trusts in his own strength, his own abilities. To use a common American phrase that we use all the time, Goliath believes in himself. Right? We talk about that all the time. You just need to believe in yourself. You just need to trust that you can do it. And we say that's where courage comes from. Believing in yourself. But I'll tell you guys, I think that's bankrupt. And I don't think that's the source of true courage at all. Because do you know what happens when you believe in yourself? Do you know what happens when you believe in yourself and only in yourself and your courage is rooted in your self-confidence and you tell yourself, I can do this because I believe in myself? The second you meet a challenge that's bigger than you, you crumble. I don't care who you are. If your courage is rooted in what you think you can do, the second you meet something that's bigger than you, you're done. We see King Saul as the perfect example of that. King Saul was head and shoulders above everybody else in Israel, wasn't he? He had no trouble going out and fighting those battles against the Amalekites and against Nahash. He has no problem fighting those battles when he has a bigger army, when he is the bigger man. But when he meets Goliath, he's done. Because he too is confident only in himself. Understand that David's confidence is rooted in something else. David's confidence is in the promise and in the deliverance of God. His confidence is not based on himself or his abilities. And if it was, there's no way a little shepherd boy, my goodness, I keep doing that today. There's no way a little shepherd boy goes and fights a giant. David is not confident in what he can do. He's confident in what God can do. And I'll tell you what, brothers and sisters, in those kinds of people, the people who are not confident in themselves, but the people who believe in God, in those kind of people, that's where you see true courage. That's where you find stories like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, because those guys weren't thinking, we're fireproof. They were thinking about what God can do. That's where you get stories like a 70-year-old, an old man, Daniel, being willing to be thrown into a lion's den because he's not confident what he can do. He's confident what God can do. That's where you find true courage. You find it in people who are not confident in themselves, but are truly confident in what God is able to do through them. Can I ask you this morning? Where is your confidence rooted? When it comes time for you to do something scary or something big or something hard, what are you confident in? Yourself or your God? And you may ask yourself this morning, at the end of the day, well, how do I develop that? I don't feel like I'm confident in God. I feel like I depend on myself a lot. How do I get confident in God? And actually, the story of David and Goliath shows us that a little bit. How did David get so confident that he could fight Goliath? Well, the story tells us that first he fought a lion, and then he fought a bear, and then God gave him Goliath. If you want to develop that confidence in God, then you need to learn to fight your lions and your bears. Because that's what God did for David. He didn't right out of the gate give him a giant to fight. God gave him other opportunities, other battles that were smaller but still bigger than him that David took on. And that gave him courage. That helped him develop his confidence in God. And so what David did is he took the opportunities, the scary opportunities that were in front of him day by day. And he used those opportunities to build a true and deep and abiding faith in God. Can I ask you, are you fighting the lions God gives you? Because day by day, he's giving you opportunities to stretch your faith, to develop that confidence in him. He's giving you scary things to do. And he wants you to fight those lions so that you're ready for the bear. And he wants you to fight that bear so that you're ready for Goliath when he comes. But so often, I don't know about you, but so often in my life, I shrink even when the lions come. You want to develop that true confidence in God, learn to fight the lions so that you can fight the bears, so that you can fight Goliath. Because true courage doesn't come from believing in yourself. True courage comes from having confidence in God. Do what you need to do to develop that confidence today. Do that scary thing. Do that hard thing. Do that thing that you know is bigger than you. And trust in God to provide and take care of you. That's how David operated. And in the following verses, we see the results. Read on with me, 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 38. Then Saul clothed David with his garments and put a bronze helmet on his head, and he clothed him with armor. And David girded his sword over his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. So David said to Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not tested them. And David took them off. He took his stick in his hand and chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in the shepherd's bag, which he had, even in his pouch. And his sling was in his hand. And he approached the Philistine. Then the Philistine came on and approached David with a shield bearer in front of him. And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy with a handsome appearance. The Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine also said to David, come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and to the beasts of the field. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and a spear and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you up into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you. And I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or by spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. Then it happened when the Philistine rose and came and drew near to meet David, that David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand into his bag and took from it a stone and slung it and struck the Philistine on his forehead. And the stone sank into his forehead so that he fell on his face to the ground. Thus David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and he struck the Philistine and killed him, but there was no sword in David's hand. Then David ran and stood over the Philistine and took his sword and drew it from its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. I love that passage because you can see David's courage there in so many different ways. First of all, you see it when he goes out to battle, and he goes out without even the proper armor and weapons, right? He's not even going to bring a sword and a shield and armor. He's just going to go with a sling and with a stone. That takes great courage. And I love how also he trash talks Goliath. He fights, he sends it right back. You know, people say that that Rabshakeh, the spokesman for the Assyrians in the days of King Hezekiah, they say he was the best trash talker in the Bible. Not a chance. David was. And I don't know about you, but even if I'm going to do something scary like fight a giant, even if I get up the courage to do that, I definitely don't have the courage to trash talk him. Like, I'm going to sit there and just be like, let's see how the battle goes. All right, you say that, that's fine. I'm just going to be quiet and do my thing. But he trash talks him. And you see, he also charges toward the battle line. When Goliath runs toward him, he runs toward Goliath. You see great courage there. And when the battle is done, you see something else amazing. I want to point this out. Verse 52. Do you see what happened? After the Philistines fled, what happened? The men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as the valley and to the gates of Ekron. And the slain Philistines lay along the way to Shoreim, even to Gath and Ekron. The sons of Israel returned from chasing the Philistines and plundered their camps. Those men, that shattered army without courage, after they witnessed the courage of David and the deliverance of God, they finally found their courage. And that's the third point that I want to make to you this morning. That courage comes not only from within you, but it comes from you witnessing the example of others. That's something that we have to appreciate, that courage is contagious. It rubs off on you. That's what we see in the life of David. We see that in so many different ways. We see that his courage was contagious, that these men rose up and chased the Philistines when they saw his courage. And it goes beyond that. If you read on in the life of David, into the book of 2 Samuel, you see several instances of this. I want you to think about the fact that this day, 1 Samuel 17, this day in the Valley of Elah, there was not a single man in the army of Israel that was willing to fight a giant. But guess what happens when you go to the end of David's reign? Guess what you find? You find that David has influenced an entire generation of mighty men who are willing to go out and do amazing things, who are willing to go out and fight giants. The stories at the end of 2 Samuel tell us that there were men that David influenced who went out and killed the sons of Goliath himself. In the Valley of Elah that day, you couldn't find a man who would fight a giant. But by the end of David's life, there's a whole slew of them. Courage is contagious. It doesn't just come from inside you, but it grows and it flourishes by the example of others. I think there are two pretty important applications to be found in that. And the first one is that you need to read. You need to read the stories of courage that are found in the Bible. And you need to read them not just as an intellectual exercise, not just as, oh, I'm reading the story of David today. You need to read them as they apply to you. You need to read them and understand he had courage. God delivered him. God can deliver me too. You need to let David's courage rub off on you and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's courage rub off on you by reading their stories and reading about how God came through for them. But the other application is this, that you need to realize that people are watching you. The people in this church are watching you. The people who are new Christians are watching you. Your children are watching you. They're watching you to see whether or not you have courage, whether or not you're willing to stand for God, whether or not you're willing to do something that you're scared of, whether or not you're willing to do something that's hard and intense. Because it's right. And they're going to learn a lot by watching you, by considering whether or not you're like those people who are in the army of Israel who were dismayed and greatly afraid and shattered by the words of a giant, or whether you're the kind of person who will stand and fight even if you're scared. People are watching you. Courage is contagious. What kind of influence will your life have? Will you have the influence of King Saul? Inspire the generation behind you to shrink back in cowardice? Or will you set an example like David and inspire the people behind you to stand up and fight for what's right, even in the face of fear? Hopefully, we'll inspire the next generation to be the kind of generation that fights giants. Because you and I both know they're going to have giants they need to fight. Courage is the first virtue. It is absolutely vital in our walk with God. And that's why we need to know and understand how it works and where it comes from. Remember that courage does not come from having little fear. It comes from feeling great responsibility. Remember that courage does not come from self-confidence. It comes from confidence in God. And remember that courage does not only come from within yourself, but it comes from witnessing the courageous example of others. If you need to develop courage today, make sure you do. Make sure you do what's necessary to develop it. And as we close this lesson, I want to make it clear that there may be people here who have never committed their lives to Christ. And I want to make it clear, I want to make sure that we understand that that can be a scary thing to do. Courage is required to dedicate your life to Christ. But I want you to understand that those 3 points we've made about courage, they relate to baptism. They relate to the courage you need to do what's right and wash your sins away and become his soldier today. You know, sometimes people are scared to get baptized. They think to themselves, what is my family going to think? Or I don't know if I can do this. Understand that today you need to show courage. Courage is not about feeling little fear. Yeah, sometimes it is scary to give your life to Christ, but there's a great responsibility. You have a responsibility to give your life to Christ. And some people don't want to get baptized because, again, they think, I can't do this. I'm not sure I can do this. Well, guess what? You can't. But God can. God can help you walk. God can help you be the kind of person that you need to be. And maybe you're sitting here this morning and you think, it's just not for me. I don't know if I'm strong enough or brave enough. I don't know if I just have the kind of personality that can actually give my life to Christ and become a Christian. You need to consider the example of others, because there are plenty of people here who lived broken, messy, messed up lives before they gave their lives to Christ, and they've straightened it out. You can too. If you need to be baptized this morning, if you need to give your life to Christ, don't let fear hold you back. Demonstrate courage today and do what you know must be done. Come to the front now while we stand and while we sing.